Welcome to the Keeping the Dream Alive podcast brought to you by Torch Technologies. In this podcast, you will learn about all things Torch, from its history to its culture, employee ownership, commitment to the warfighter, our community involvement, and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen and stay connected with Torch by following us on all your social media platforms. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoy the Keeping the Dream Alive podcast. Today, I'm sitting down to talk with Bill Rorick, co-founder of Torch Technologies. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation regarding the Tugboat Institute and address their third P of People First today. The Tugboat Institute defines People First as engaging a workforce of talented associates who excel as a team and are motivated by the purpose and the culture, as well as by the total compensation and the belief that by taking care of them, they will take care of the customers, suppliers, partners, communities, and their families. I know from our conversations in the past that the employees and just the people in general mean a great deal to you and has played a big part in the formation of Torch 20 years ago and continues to play a key role in the company even today. One of the key things that you established early on that I believe shows just how much the value of your employees is your ESOP, which has been named ESOP Company of the Year twice by the New South chapter of the ESOP Association in 2018 and 2021. How exciting is it for you to hear your employees' stories of what they've been able to do after they've retired because of the ESOP? And did you ever imagine it would become such a pivotal part of the company and impact so many of your current and former employees in the way it has?
Well, that's a lot of questions. We'll see if I can see if I can get through all those. The ESOP was really core. The employee ownership was really core at the very foundation when Don and I sat down and sketched out on a napkin what we were going to do over at Rolo's back in 2002, I guess it was. And I had worked at another company here in town called Camber, and they had gone ESOP just prior to me going to work there. And we really realized from looking at that model that it represented a lot of what we wanted to do with the employees. However, when we first started, we weren't quite big enough for an ESOP, and we did the arithmetic and looked at the cost associated with it and what we were able to put into the ESOP and what the cash flow of that would be early on. Certainly, as the contributions got larger, we could have done that maybe earlier if we were able to contribute more earlier. But as we sort of made the decision that when we got to 50 employees, we would put the ESOP into place. But we believed in everyone participating as an owner from the very beginning. So every employee that came into the company, including admin, staff, support staff, everyone got a option for ownership in the company, basically a stock option that said that if they stayed until it vested, they would be able to buy ownership in the company. And we did that for literally every employee that we hired had that opportunity. And we did that at the value associated at the time. So if the company grew, their value of their stock would grow. So we started in October 2002. Then toward the end of 2004, we became 50 employees. We had 50 employees. And so we started then to look at, we had made the commitment to be an ESOP. Well, you can't go out and become an ESOP overnight. It's a fairly sophisticated financial instrument, so it takes a little while to set it up. So we began the process, and we really didn't get finished with the process until after the end of the year. And so we got to looking at all the rules and legislation around it, and we realized that we could make a contribution retroactive back in 2004 so that we did meet our commitment to the employees of when we were 50 employees to be an ESOP. So even though it was toward the end of the year when we became 50 employees, we decided to make a contribution into the fund that year. It was only 2%, but nevertheless, that 2% was really big to us back then, and we made that contribution retroactive 2004 on top of the 401k contribution we made that year. So it was 2% that the employees did not expect, and it was 2% of ownership in the company, and those shares were at 12 cents a share into the ESOP. I don't know how many thousands of a percent I'd have to sit down and calculate it that we have grown since then, but those shares have gone on to be very, very valuable for the employees. So then in retroactive to 2004, that ESOP was established in 2005. That ESOP and the recognition that everyone had ownership in the company, the folks on board then already had that feeling, but this was shares in an account that gave you a statement where you could actually see it. The SARs, a lot of folks didn't really understand the SARs until later when they started cashing them in and started to realize this is a real attractive benefit. But it created a camaraderie where everybody had a stake in the outcome. There's actually a book out there that's titled Everyone Has a Stake in the Outcome, and unfortunately it was written before I coined the phrase. I later found that book and read the book, and the story in that book's very similar to Torch's story in the attributes attributed to being an employee-owned company are very similar to those that we've experienced at Torch. But with everybody having a stake in the outcome, everybody's committed to the success of the company. Everybody's doing everything they can to make sure the customer's happy. They're performing at 110% to make sure that the company performs, because at the end of the day, if the company does well, their ESOP account does well, and so their financial return is directly tied to the company's return. That's a bit unusual. There are a lot of ESOPs around, but in the grand scheme of things, they're still just a small smidgen of the companies that are out there. And I think it's really strong to have the employee's future tied to the success of the company. And it creates a performance equation for the company that's almost unreal. In a funny little story, years later, when we would convert 100% to the, well, actually, when we bought the building, created Freedom Real Estate and bought the building that we're living in up there on South Parkway, I drove by one Saturday night, and every light in the building seemed to be on. The building was glowing with light, and I thought, well, that's not real good. We're spending a lot of money, because those fluorescent lights not only are expensive to run, but they create heat, which makes the air conditioner run. So there's hardly a soul in the building, but most of the lights are on. So on Monday morning, I jotted out a little email and asked everyone before they go home to make sure the lights are turned out. Cited to them that the electric bill is now being paid by you, not by the landlord, because you are now a part owner in the building. Because Freedom Real Estate that owned the building is a sister company, and our ESOP owns both Freedom Real Estate and Torch Technology. So indirectly, if you can save money on the light bill, I can put that money in your ESOP, and thus you'll have more money in your retirement account so you can retire earlier. So the next Saturday night, my wife and I are on the way to Rosie's again on the South Parkway, drive by. That building is pitch black. There's not a light on anywhere in that building. And I wish I could still say that's true, but when we remodeled the buildings, we totally redid those buildings. The new laws require us to have safety lights on. So as you drive by now, you can see the safety lights on, but at least we've changed those lights to LED, so they're not generating the heat or burning the electricity that they used to do. So that's just a little tiny story, and it's really, it's somewhat insignificant in terms of the many, many stories I could tell you in terms of where employees have made an exceptional contribution to our warfighter and to our customers to make sure that their programs are successful. But it is very representative of the power of employee ownership. Everyone had a stake in that outcome. So I don't know who the last person is that left the building, but I suspect they walked around and made sure every light was turned out. So, that is representative of the culture that's been created in this company, and I do totally appreciate the commitment of all of our employees.
Another way that I believe shows your dedication to putting people first is this culture that you have created, as Torch has been named one of the nation's best workplaces for 6 consecutive years. What do you think contributes to that recognition, and what are some of the ways that you have made Torch more than just a workplace but a family?
Well, I think our employees contribute to that a lot more than I do. We Don and I set out to have a good employee benefits package because we thought that was important to treat our employees well. But employees as owners tend to look for the company to be successful. And you can't be successful if you're fighting with the other employees. So while we do have our internal family squabbles, at the end of the day, you know, we're all part of a family. We're all pulling together. So that creates a culture where everybody wants the company to do well, and creates a culture where people are willing to work together, even if they don't benefit out of the success that comes from it. One huge example of that is when we entered the Eglin marketplace down there. We had hardly a soul down there, just a handful of people, but we're bidding a multi-hundred person contract. You know, we had dozens of people in Huntsville who volunteered and worked on the proposal, knowing they would probably never bill a single hour and never really benefit from that work, other than the fact that it would raise the value of their company and thus raise the value of their ESOP account. And so, you know, that made writing that proposal much, much easier than if we'd have been a traditional company where you'd have to lobby and pull and beg these people to come and write the proposal. We had people volunteering and standing up because they knew the success would be good for them and be good for the company. What's good for the company would be good for them, and it creates an environment where people want the company to be successful. They want to work together, and that creates a culture. I wish I could claim credit for it, but I think it just happened as people started to realize, you know, if this company does well, I do well, so let me figure out how to make sure this company does well. And so the overwhelming majority, 95 out of 100, are here to make a difference, and at times maybe higher than 95 out of 100, but our employee surveys generally tell us that we have a good high employee engagement, and much higher than the rest of the traditional companies in our space. So that's something to be proud of. The culture is something that I really hope we're able to hang on to. We've been able to do that through all this, and it's been particularly challenging with COVID, where we're not together. But even through COVID, we were able to write huge proposals and be successful and be very impactful in terms of the future of the company. So we found a way. We had to create a new way to do that, because we had to stay 6 feet apart, whereas normally everyone's sitting around a table in a review. We had to learn how to do that with Zoom and other things. So I think our family atmosphere, even though we're now 1,000-plus people, is still prevalent in the company, and I hope it stays that way forever.
Finally, I want to shift from the employees to the community, because a big part of putting people first is seen by your commitment to supporting the community around you. I read that Torch supported 201 nonprofits with over 3.5 million in employees and corporate giving. This statistic is amazing, and what is also incredible is that it took Torch Helps 14 years to donate its first million, but in the last three, you've been able to donate 2.5 million. With that growth and your continued commitment to giving back to the community, what does the future look like for Torch Helps, and what are some of the ways that Torch is looking to give back to the community around it?
Well, I think the numbers you quoted there includes Torch Helps given as well as the company's given. But I would back up and say of the things that I'm most proud of over the years at Torch is the formation of Torch Helps. Years ago, I challenged Janet Hainish and Clay Hagen and took them to lunch over at Wings. Wings doesn't exist anymore, so it's starting to show our age, aren't we? Over at Wings, and asked them, I said, we get a lot of requests for the company to give money, and I have no clue what the good charities are. Could you help me put together a program to identify those charities? Well, they didn't exactly do what I asked them to do. They went off and created this thing we know as Torch Helps today, which is an employee-given program, not a company-given program. Torch Helps is totally run and administered by volunteer employees inside the company. And we generally encourage our executive management to stay out of it so that the employees can truly run it. It turns out to be a good place for employees to get leadership experience and learn about the community and be involved in the community. But the impact that it's had on the culture of the company, as well as the impact on the community, is almost overwhelming at times, and And we could spend days of podcasts talking about, you know, the stories that are just gut-wrenching about the impact that Torch Helps has had on the community. And I'm really proud that the company has been able to augment that in the things that we're able to do. And and the stories around all that are just so compelling that we need to keep doing this. I'm particularly proud of a number of the charities that they've been able to have a huge impact in, and personally I've selected a few of those, and because I've had the opportunity to view them firsthand through what Torch is doing, and see the criteria and learn about it and be able to get involved in things that I am particularly fond of. The give back to the community, we've sort of treated that. Torch Helps, in the beginning and currently, they don't seek any publicity for that. There's been a few times that they get publicity. They do have their little web page, but it's mostly to communicate to the community about and give them examples of what types of grants that are successful and make sure that the community understands the grant program and how to apply. But they've never sought publicity. And while I probably in the beginning disagreed with that decision, I honored the fact that it was an employee charity and that's what they wanted to do. Torch has been able to take advantage of what we've learned from their review of a lot of these charities, and it's helped us. So in the end game now, some 15, 20 years later, we've been able to learn about the community through the Torch Helps grants. So I guess in the end game, Janet and Clay may have accomplished what I originally asked them to do, because we do have well-screened charities that we can look and choose from now, because we can look and see that they've been through the review that this Torch Helps them through. And then Torch Helps, a bunch of engineers on that board, you can imagine they got a well-refined checklist that if you get a grant from Torch, you're a worthwhile charity that they've gone through and screened, and that you're doing good things for the community. So there's at least 201 really good organizations out there in our community, and I think that covers a lot of North Alabama, actually, not just Madison County. And now it covers down in Florida at our field office down there and out in Colorado, and I'm sure there's probably a few others in other locations too, but it is, I mean, if I had to write a short list of three or four things that I'm most proud of at Torch, that would be on the short list.
Yeah,
it's maybe the top of the list.
I think this idea, this principle of people first, that the Tugboat Institute is something that hasn't been around for a very long time, but the things that you instilled in the culture when you and Don formed Torch kind of played a key role in kind of getting this certified evergreen and kind of being part of the Tugboat Institute, which you didn't even know of at the time, which is, it's just crazy to wrap my head around, because your willingness to give back to the community ties directly into your ultimate purpose. Is like, if the community's helped giving you, it's helped got you to where you are, like, let's give back to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is key to us being here, right? You know, we live in this community and we want it to be a better place, and there's nobody better equipped to help it be a better place than we are. And we've been very blessed with the opportunities we've been given and the ability to move forward the way we have. And, I'm a strong believer in paying it forward. And I think our employees are even stronger believer in that than I am. It's incredible. What's really incredible is to see a job application where it asks, why do you want to come to work at Torch? And they said, because of what you do in the community.
Yeah.
That's when we have succeeded. You know, we are doing the right things. And that's how we want to be known as doing a great job for a customer, but we also want to be known as a great citizen in our community. And you can do both. And we've strived hard to do that.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me again today. I thoroughly enjoyed learning more about the principle of people first within the Tugboat Institute and what it means to Torch, and a few of the key aspects that you've instilled into this Torch's culture that's kind of made these employees really buy in. If you're listening and you want to find out more about the Tugboat Institute, you can visit their website today, tugboatinstitute.com. But thank you again for sitting down and talking with me.
All right. And if you enjoyed this, and we would challenge all of you that are employees at Torch, we need to keep this dream alive. We need to keep giving back to the community and keep doing what we're doing.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Keeping the Dream Alive podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen and stay connected with us on social media for news and updates surrounding the company. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it.